You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hello, hello. This is episode number 68 of the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. My name is Scott McKay. I will be your host today, and I want to welcome you to this show. We're going to do big things on this show today. They're going to be different things than we usually do because I've got a guest who's a new friend of mine. He's an author from London, England, and his name is Ben Adams. He's the author of a new book called 6 Months to Get a Life. How's it going, Ben?
Hello, Scott. Good to hear you.
Well, good to hear you, too. It's always good to talk to guys who are across the drink, especially when they want to talk dating and relationships. And you've got this really cool book that I learned about recently. And I tell you what, you had me at the second paragraph. It's absolutely hilarious. Your writing actually reminds me a little bit of Mill Millington, who has the infamous blog Things My Girlfriend and I Have Argued About that has since become legendary from when it first hit the scene on the web probably 15 years ago now. That British wit is alive and well in your work. So any of the guys listening, I think, are in for a good show today if they like that kind of funny, which I do. So your book is called 6 Months to Get a Life, and it is about a guy who's recently divorced and thinking, okay, my life seems like it's over right now. What am I going to do to bounce back? I'm giving myself half a year to do it. Tell me more about the whole premise behind the book, because I think it's fascinating.
Excellent. Well, as you mentioned, I've just split up with my wife a year or so ago now, and I went through...
In real life.
Okay. So what I did when I split up was first got drunk a few times, had a moan, shouted at everybody, shut myself off, got miserable. And then I started thinking, this can't go on for very long. I can't just sit here and drink beer and watch soap operas on the telly every night. So I thought, I've got to do something about it. So what do I do about it? Do I go out and go on dates? Oh, that's a bit scary. It's a bit too soon. So in the end, I decided to write a book about it. So I started writing a book about me. After about 3 days of writing that, I decided that people had slit their wrists if they wanted to read that. So I thought, it can't be about me. So then I made up a new ex. And you want to try doing that sometimes. It's quite good fun. She was gorgeous. She was lovely. She had big breasts. Okay. She was intelligent. She was funny. She was lovely. So I really enjoyed making up a new ex. So then,
everything all of our exes should be, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Not that, very good. I don't know whether my ex is listening to this. I hope she isn't, but there you go.
I can almost assure you she is.
Yeah, let's fingers crossed. So after inventing the new ex, I invented some new friends. I invented some new scenarios. And I got my leading character out on a few dates. So I had some fun with him, even if I was sitting at home typing myself. And I loved it, actually. And I wrote 6 Months to Get a Life. And there's a bit of love interest in it, a bit of fun, a bit of humour. Divorce is a bit of a miserable subject at times, but I didn't want to be miserable. So the book's not that miserable either. But now I'm at the point where I've written a book. It's published. So now I've got to get off my backside and start living life again.
Well, you know, comedy about historically or traditionally miserable subjects can be the funniest comedy of all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we all like to laugh at what we fear or what we dread. And that's why I guess I was really drawn to your book to begin with, because I've got to tell you something, Ben. When I first got it divorced, I felt like my life was over. I looked at myself in the mirror. I looked at an empty, huge house that reminded me of that evil hotel in The Shining, you know, with Jack Nicholson and axes and bloody twins and everything. And I was like, man, this is just the worst. And I felt like such a victim. And I was thinking to myself, you know, here I am, 35, 36 years old. I am never going to see another woman naked in my entire life. This is it. This is the end of the line. I've lost. Game over. And I didn't like that feeling. And it sounds like you're saying the same thing. You know, you went through this poor me period that lasted probably about 48 hours before you said, oh,
come on,
that's
about 3 months. Come on.
Oh, well, okay. Now, see, you actually made it sound like it was much shorter. I see what you did there.
Yeah, I was living with my parents for a while as well, for about 3 months with my parents. I mean, that's enough to drive anyone mad. I tell you, I left home when I was about 18 and vowed never to go back. And then when I was 40 and living at home in my parents' spare room, that was a bit depressing.
Well, that's brutal. I don't know how you can make comedy about that, but I'm reckoning you did.
I did. Yeah.
So writing this book, I have to ask you, was it more cathartic or did it give you more vision for your own dating life, or maybe a little bit of both?
It was absolutely a bit of both. It's funny. I've always wanted to be a writer, but up until this process, I think I've written stuff that wasn't very deep and meaningful, didn't have much feeling to it. But going through a breakup when there are kids involved and you've lived with your wife for 20 years, you get the emotions. And I think they just wanted to come out. So it was very cathartic and it did make me feel better. It was like seeing a therapist without actually having to pay a therapist. So that was good. But also, actually, the bit I enjoyed most was the making up all the funny stories and the scenarios and getting my leading character into a few scrapes. That made me smile.
Right. Did you hit writer's block at all or did it just flow?
You know what? I've heard about writer's block, and believe me, I used to do a day job working in local government, and I used to hit writer's block every day at work. But writing this book, it was a bit of a labor of love, so it did just flow. It actually didn't take me that long to write it.
Give me some examples of what your character goes through in the book.
So I suppose towards the start, when he gets his divorce, lands on his doormat, he goes off to work. I think he's offended that everything is still normal and nobody notices that he's a different person. he gets upset when people don't notice he's not wearing his wedding ring. He then has some challenges going out with his friends who try to get him to dance with women in nightclubs, and he's absolutely hopeless as a dancer. Some of my friends would say he's a bit like me in that respect, but there you go. He's absolutely scared stiff of talking to women, particularly attractive women. He just, his tongue's about 10 foot long, gets tied around his teeth as soon as he tries to open his mouth. And the things.
Now, hold on a second. If you have a tongue 10 foot long, that can be an advantage with that.
Depends on what the first impression is, though, Scott, doesn't it? I mean, you have to have been able to talk to him a little bit first.
Yeah, it's easier to get tongue tied when your tongue is 10 inches long.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, he's a bit petrified. So as soon as any woman even looks at him, he's suddenly thinking, oh, what do I say? What do I say? Do you come here often? I've got two kids. I'm divorced. I've got a dog. And all sorts of nonsense like that, rather than actually
scintillating.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Boring them stupid. So he goes through a bit of that. Mm-hmm. He goes through a bit of recollection about how he met his wife and things like that when various events jog his memory. He met his wife in a sexually transmitted diseases clinic, funnily enough, but I quite enjoyed writing that one. He meets his old marriage guidance counsellor in a library and has an altercation with her. That was quite good fun. She remembers him because she started talking to him and his ex about sex, and he told her to mind her own business after his ex said that she'd never had an orgasm with him and all this sort of stuff. So he has some fun, but then gradually he begins to move on and he begins to meet women. He meets two pretty close together and wants one and ends up with the other, but I won't give too much away.
Right, exactly. I tell you, you had me from the second paragraph of this book where you said something to the effect of after the divorce, he felt like he had been smoked and thrown away like a bad cigarette or something. Yeah. It was the funniest thing I ever heard. It was just funny.
It's funny though. Don't you remember when you split up? It's a bit how you feel. You sort of feel there's an opportunity there, but actually you just feel a bit of a waste of space as well at times. Depends on whether you're optimistic or pessimistic, I suppose.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this book is great because it'll probably be better than therapy or advice in the immediate aftermath of a bad breakup, whether that's a divorce or just a breakup you didn't want to happen.
Yeah.
I think it'll be that way for a lot of guys because we all tend to feel the same way when we go through that and we think we're the only guy who's ever felt that.
Yeah.
In other words, oh, here I am. My life is over. I'm such a loser. How come nobody notices? Well, nobody's noticing because they have their own lives to worry about.
Yeah.
And you're used to getting a bunch of attention, and now you don't have any attention from women, and you're confronted with what it is like not to have a woman in your life. Even if the relationship was bad that you're getting out of, at least you had a woman in your life. Now you've got nothing. And it's like, wow, it's like frying pan and a fire. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I remember thinking, even though the circumstances of my own divorce, which are well documented on this show and in my writings, so I won't belabor it, really weren't my fault. Everybody was telling me it wasn't my fault. I sort of needed it to be my fault. So I knew I could have some control over it going forward. In other words, if I fixed something, if I got better at something, then, you know, there would be less likelihood of a divorce happening.
I see what you're saying.
That involves making a decision and moving forward, but it's not something we have the wherewithal to decide in the immediate aftermath. So a little bit of humor is a good thing. I think it's better than getting some agony aunt to give you advice to see a therapist.
The last thing you want is advice, isn't it? Didn't want this to be a self-help book. I'd want to rip it up and throw it away. You'd be helped to smile again. You don't want to be told what to do.
I remember my brother, who is a great guy. We've been best man at each other's weddings. My brother and I get along wonderfully. Mm-hmm. He sent me a DVD of Spaceballs as soon as my divorce was final. Which is about the wackiest movie ever, you know. And I was always so grateful for that because I plopped it in and I watched it and I was like, yeah, you know what? It took me away for an hour and a half. That's good. Yet, you know, back to reality here for a second. I have to tell you, Ben, you mentioned something about not being ready to date, feeling like this is a great opportunity, yet I feel completely lost in it. I think a lot of guys, especially in a divorce situation or if they've had a girlfriend long term, the breakup is over. You know cognitively the breakup is over, but you still feel like you're cheating on your wife or your girlfriend when you go on those first couple of dates. It's just so weird, right?
You do. But also, actually, there's something in me that thinks I want to date before my ex dates. I want to get out there again before she does because I don't want to see her before she's seen me.
Right, right. It's like a little bit of a contest.
Yeah, I want to stick my finger up there and say, yeah, I got there first. I'm over you.
Right, yeah.
It's very un-British of me, probably, but there you go.
Well, I think that would be rather American, too. But I remember distinctly feeling like that and going on a date with a woman who was absolutely polar opposite, perhaps bipolar opposite of my ex-wife, as it turned out. But, you know, my first wife was Latina, very waifish and rather short, looked like a ballerina and was artsy, you know. Uh-huh. And this woman was a voluptuous Texas woman with a Texas accent, blonde hair, brown eyes, feisty attitude. Couldn't have been more different. Except for one thing, she was still crazy like my ex. I was still attracting crazy women, which I'm sure would make for a great comedy novel. But in real life, it was back to the old patterns. Does your character in your book sort of find himself going back to the old patterns and dating people like his ex, or does he go somewhere completely different? And how does that make for hijinks in your book?
He goes the opposite way. I think he's probably had enough of his ex. He's had enough of her type. He's had enough of sensible people. In fact, yeah, that's true. Comparing him to yours, his ex was very sensible, always would make the rational decisions, always would go for what they need rather than what they want. And I think Graham thought, I've had enough of that. I'm going for a bit of fun. I'm going for somebody who's totally different, got a different spark to her. And he finds her as well. He really was looking for something different.
In your personal life, how did your path from being divorced to, I guess the best way to put it is your way of putting it, getting a life within 6 months, how did that parallel your character, Graham, in the book?
Yeah, what did I say? I split up a year ago. Have I got a life? Do you know what? I've got a life I'm enjoying. I have dated. At this precise time, I think I'm probably single, but that doesn't mean I haven't had a bit of fun along the way. I suppose you're sort of probably single. Well, it depends what
explain.
You call. All right.
Yeah, explain that.
But you can have an odd casual relationship, can't you? I don't know how it works in the States, but sometimes something doesn't constitute a relationship, but it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, well, that would still be not single per se.
Right,
that would be
then,
just not an exclusive relationship, I suppose. Yeah, semantics, right?
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Exactly.
So you have women in your life, but you're not necessarily ready to jump into another relationship.
Yeah,
I
might put it in the singular rather than the plural, but I don't know. No, you know what? I'm just having fun. And actually, writing the book kept me quite busy. In fact, the last date I went on was a bit of fun. It was a friend of a friend. I'd never met her before. And so he said to me, oh, come on, you've got to go out with her. She's lovely. She's looking for a relationship. So I turned up at this bar to meet her. There was this woman standing at the bar. He told me what she looked like. She was blonde, tall, attractive. So there was this woman standing at the bar. I went up, started talking to her. We were getting on like a house on fire really well. And then about 5 minutes later, I got a tap on the shoulder from this woman who said, I think you're supposed to be on a date with me. And she looked like she'd come straight out of WWE.
Oh, boy. So you thought this was the woman.
So
you were
I thought this was the woman I was supposed
was
to
it?
Be with, and it wasn't. And I didn't quite know what to do. But in the end, again, being British, a bit reserved, doing things the proper way, I apologized to the first woman and went off with the second woman and had probably the worst night of my life.
Oh, I sure wouldn't have done that.
No, well, maybe. I think I regretted it ever since. I've been back to the bar since, but the other woman wasn't there.
all to save face with your friend who set you up, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, his ex-friend.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, you know, I vaguely remember some movie or TV show having that scenario in it, that exact scenario. He goes to the bar, and maybe one of the listeners can write me and fill me in on this, because I have no idea how to even search for this as a theme in a movie or a show. Yeah, probably. It sounds like good fun for several different people thinking it's an original thought, yeah. You know.
Fun for several people except me.
Right, it's not very funny to you. Well, you know, maybe that brings up a good point. In terms of things you've gone through since your breakup and things that Graham goes through in the book, what are some things that you have positioned in the book for us to laugh at that it's really going to be helpful for us to read, because whenever it happens to us, we feel kind of like Charlie Brown being laughed at by all the kids in class, and we feel like we're really a loser because it happened to us, and this thing can't possibly be ever happening to anybody else. I am absolutely wit's end about it. When you write about it, though, it's under the light of day, and we all realize, hey, you know what? Maybe this is something somebody's gone through.
Yeah.
Some examples.
I would say, let's bring children into this, shall we? So sure. I personally have got two children, and they spend a fair bit of time with me and a fair bit of time with my ex. So I thought, well, I'll write a bit about that, because I know what children go through in a breakup, and then how children react to their dad getting to the point when he's going to start dating again. So I put Graham Hope in the same situation. I gave him two children. They are early teenagers, and they observe his efforts to get himself back out on the dating scene. And there's a few examples where they're taking the mickey out of him about his antics. They tell him at one point that he'll never get a girlfriend, and he's all innocent, says, why not? I'm a good-looking guy. And they said, well, look at the clothes you wear. And they basically give him fashion lessons. And coming from children, that's a situation I think I've been in before, and it's quite hard to take, but it happens. They then have conversations about whether their dad should be dating again. And actually, in my experience, the kids are absolutely fine about it. I mean, you wouldn't date the day after you split up with the kid's mother or something like that. So they have conversations about that. Then there are some practicalities about whether he can take his girlfriend back to his house when his kids are there and what sort of examples that's setting. So I explore a bit of that. Those sorts of scenarios would be recognized by a lot of other people, I would say.
Yeah, you know, I was a single dad. I had a 5-year-old daughter. And I have to admit, I did some naughty things. I felt a bit like I was sneaking girls back into my dorm back in private school.
Yeah, yeah.
I was one of these unfortunate souls in America, the few and the, what's the opposite of proud? I guess embarrassed, humiliated, who actually spent years of high school at a private boarding school with other guys. And of course, it's different than college. You can't just, you know, bring women to your dorm anytime you want. You can never bring women to your dorm.
Can't you in college?
And in college you can, but in high school, not so much.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Parents to answer to at that point, you know. So I always felt like I was sneaking girls back to my dorm, you know, in situations where I had a babysitter or whatever, and I would, you know, come home and excuse the babysitter and still have the woman here, but my daughter's asleep and she'll never wake up and this, that, and the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I can absolutely relate
to
that.
Sort of thing.
Another thing you just mentioned about having children is them giving you dating advice and giving you fashion advice and so forth. And when you were saying that, I'm picturing a 40-year-old guy in an Affliction t-shirt. You know, it's like, what am I doing? I'm taking advice from my kids.
And jogging bottoms.
Right, exactly. And and then, you know, your children give you advice about what it's like for them to date, and you don't really know what to make of it, but you'll give it a go anyway because you're not hearing any better advice.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can turn out to be disastrous because – really, everybody thinks they can give dating advice and everybody really can't. And I thought it was funny to listen to you say that. Another thing you talked about was this whole idea of how long should you wait after breaking up with someone before dating again? What's your take on that, and how was it handled in your book?
So it's a really hard one, isn't it, Scott? I don't know what you think. I don't think there is a right and a wrong answer, is there? It depends on a lot of things. It depends, I suppose, on how close you live to your ex. I suppose in my personal circumstances, it's fairly close. So would you want to see her in the supermarket when you're buying your condoms? I don't know that you would. If you live further away, you might have a bit more freedom. And it also, I suppose, depends on the circumstances of the breakup. Graham Hope's breakup in the book was quite gradual, and I think he and his ex in their heart of hearts knew it was over. It wasn't as if one of them walked in on the other one having sex with the au pair or something like that. It was a gradual thing. So I think in some ways it didn't matter that he dated too soon. I don't think anybody was going to get angry with him, except maybe his father-in-law, who probably wanted to kill him anyway, but that's another story.
Well, that's a good angle right there. Man, I'll tell you what, the au pairs are always trouble, aren't they?
Man, I'd quite like them to be trouble.
Perhaps. But, you know, here you have a situation where the guy's divorced, he's out dating again. I believe insofar as how long do you wait before dating again after a breakup, I've always been an advocate for at least getting out there and being social, if not jumping into a long-term relationship immediately afterwards. I don't advocate that.
Yeah.
Because the problem is the longer people wait, and this goes for men or women, the more time they have to feel alone, feel hopeless, feel like getting a girlfriend's too good to be true, getting a boyfriend's too good to be true if you're a woman, and they have all this time to feel sorry for themselves and to start going into this abyss of self-loathing and self-doubt. Whereas if you take the time and get back out there, it's rather like going out and playing a sport and falling and scuffing your knee when you're a kid. The sooner you brush yourself off and go back and play again, the better off you'll be. If you have time to ruminate on how you got hurt, it was painful, you may never get back on the field again. So I think, you know, breakups are a lot like that. That's my personal take on it.
I think you're so right. It's funny, actually, I keep talking about my Britishness, I suppose, but actually we're British people are known for their reserved nature. And I think the longer we didn't go out and date, the longer British people didn't go out and date, the harder it would become to be yourself amongst strangers. And actually, you're right. If you stop doing that, if you sit in your house for 3 weeks or 3 months or whatever, then you'd feel really, really awkward next time you go out. I was lucky, I think, actually. I suppose living with my parents after my divorce, there was no way I was going to stay in, so I went out. So actually, I don't think I stopped socializing, and I think that's totally the right advice.
Yeah, well, that's one advantage. Forced to get out of the house.
Yeah, the only advantage, maybe.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is absolutely valid. One of the things you've been talking about, Ben, it's come up repeatedly during the course of this podcast, is this idea of being British and being reserved. And I know you're poking a little bit of fun at yourself. One thing I've noticed about men in Britain is they get henpecked by women and give away their power to women a lot. And they play a lot of the Mr. Nice Guy game. I notice a lot of people in Britain apologize. Men say, oh, I'm sorry, all the time. And women just seem like they have the upper hand and are in control and are wearing the pants. And men just don't know what to make of that. And they don't know what to do about that. And there's kind of maybe more so than any other country in the world, frankly, except perhaps Canada. This whole idea of where does masculinity fit in? What does it mean to be a man with women nowadays? Things like that. How have you dealt with that question, and how does your character deal with it in the course of the book?
So there is a thing, isn't there? Men need to be masculine, I think, to attract women. We need to have a certain amount of strength about us. Some of us might show it in different ways. Some of us might show it through what we say rather than bench pressing 200 pounds or whatever a heavy bench pressing weight is. Don't ask me. I haven't got a clue. Shows you that I don't do that, doesn't it?
Well, it depends on who you are, whether that's heavy.
But you need to be a bit assertive, don't you? And I suppose know what makes other people tick. It's partly about being masculine. It's partly just about knowing yourself and being a bit confident.
Well, I think guys can't help but feel a little beat down after a breakup, though, especially if the woman broke up with them and they didn't want the breakup to happen. Right.
I think when there's heartbreak like that involved, then having a conversation about going out on dates again within the first few weeks after that would be pretty hard, wouldn't it? You have to come to terms with your own emotions first, I'm sure.
Yeah, to some degree. I don't think you'd want to wallow in them.
Maybe for a night or two.
Well, a couple of nights. It's better if you can wallow in your emotions with someone hot, though.
Well, very true.
She can help you wallow in
your emotions. She can take your mind off things.
You know, obviously, I'm making a joke there, but there's an element of truth behind it. The first time I went out with a woman, I think I already talked about her a little bit. It was rather soon after my divorce was final. Someone made a rather snide remark that the ink wasn't even dry on the divorce agreement yet before I was out gallivanting. And I'll never forget, she asked me, well, how soon ago was your divorce final? After, you know, midway through the second date, I think. And I told her, and she rolled her eyes and went, oh, God. And sure enough, literally she had to help wallow in my self-pity with me for a little bit. I mean, it was really pathetic, but she was very good at attempting to help me forget my ex-wife in ways that are very effective with the likes of red-blooded guys like me.
Well, exactly.
So, yes. So tell us a little bit more about the book. You've just released it. It's brand new. You can get it on Amazon, correct?
You can get it on Amazon, yeah. Amazon US, you can get it on Barnes & Noble, hard copy and ebooks. I'm not used to all this stuff. I've never been a writer before, but yeah, it's available anywhere I think you'd want to find it.
Well, it's already pre-sold pretty well. I looked at the numbers and you're already moving copies of this. It's already, dare I say, wildly popular, which is why I'm having you on this show. I think you're being a little bit humble about it.
A little bit British.
See, there we go again. Yeah. I've set up a URL for you guys, as always, so that you can get your hands on this book. It's at www.thechickwhisperer.com/Ben. Believe it or not, we've never had a Ben on the show before, so B-E-N, Ben. That's thechickwhisperer.com/Ben. The name of the book, once again, is 6 Months to Get a Life. If you've been through a breakup ever, if you've been through one recently, you've got to get your hands on this book. Just take my word for it on that. And even if you've never had your heart broken before, it's still pretty darn funny. So if you're a human being and you can fog a mirror and you're listening to the sound of my voice, you probably will enjoy this book. Even, I dare say, if you're a woman. Perhaps especially if you're a woman. So www.thechickwhisperer.com/Ben. Ben Adams, man, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a different show, and frankly, I've enjoyed it. I think we should do more shows like this.
Scott, next time I get married, I'm going to invite you to my wedding. Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.
Only if I get to officiate.
Don't push it.
I can do that. You know. I don't know if I'm legal to do that in the UK, but hey, you know, anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Guys, if you're not on my mailing list, I send absolutely valuable content to you every single day on how to get better with women, how to succeed in relationships, and more lately about how to succeed in life in general, be the man you want to be, get the social circle you want, and even get promoted in the workplace and have the career you want. So go over to www.thechickwhisperer.com, sign up for the newsletter. It's absolutely free as always, and I've even got a free gift for you when you sign up that you're sure to like. Until I talk to you next time on infamous episode number 69, which I better get a good guess for, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009 by XMY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the XMY Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.